Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and today we are talking research, material science, and more with Dr. Jinrong Zhang. Dr. Zhang serves as Associate Professor of Physics at Baylor University. An expert in advanced materials that impact a number of industries, Dr. Zhang is developing a groundbreaking nanoscale microscope that provides insights into a material's chemical, thermal, and optical makeup at the smallest possible level. As a tool for scientists, her microscope has implications in healthcare, energy, environmental health, and much more. We'll dive into how that works with Dr. Zhang, who joined the Baylor faculty in 2010, a little over a decade here at Baylor. And Dr. Zhang, thanks so much for joining us. It's great to have you on the program today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you know, we will, I know if people, if they listen, they can keep an eye out for you in our R1 research campaign. You're one of five Baylor professors featured in this year's campaign on social media, on billboards, in ads. So people can put a face to the name when they see you in the R1 campaign upcoming. So thanks for taking the time to do that and share your research in that format as well.
Oh, that's a pleasure. That's really an honor to be able to be part of this.
A lot of photos and videos that you subjected, you know, you gave part of your afternoon for. So that's fantastic. Thank you for that.
That was fun.
That's good. Well, good. We're glad you enjoyed it and your fellow professors as well. Yeah, as we dive into this and give people a sense in part of why we want to highlight your research so much, let's define a few vocabulary words or concepts. You know, not all of us are at that intersection of physics and advanced materials and chemicals and these things. So let's define a few of those concepts. When we talk about advanced materials, first off, what are those?
So the advanced materials, from the composition point of view, it sounds normal. It's metal, it's oxide. You see them fairly often. What's advanced about it is you change their dimension and you change their size. You change to very small, let's say 2 nanometer scales. And then the magic part is that their properties are changing. And then you can change them to a way that you can use it differently. So that's the advanced materials.
So a lot of that's designed, what, for efficiency or safety or things of that nature?
So depends on how you want to use it for. So, for example, if you want to use it for guiding the light, and if you have a bulk of a material, you may not be able to do it. But if you change to the thin film, and you can do it, and other examples would be for the catalyst. And if you have a bulk of material and your efficiency is low, and if you change to a small size, let's say the nanoscale, and then you have lots of active sites can interact with molecule, and then it becomes more efficient.
So obviously material science, and we're talking about advanced materials, material science, one of the five academic initiatives of Illuminate. So a very important area at Baylor and elsewhere, growing area as well. What do you find most interesting or important about studying advanced materials?
So from my research point of view, or from everybody's research point of view, what's magic about it is you can tune the material into the way that you want the applications to be. So just like what we said just now, and you can change their size, you can change their shape, you can change their charge concentration, and you can tune their composition. And by doing all this, you can change their chemical property, you can change their optical property, you can change the way that how they react with molecules. So I'm in the catalysis world, and you can change how they interact with molecule, how they bond the molecule, how they break the molecule apart. And I also work in the optic world. And you can change how the propagate light, how they guide the light, how they confine the light. And so that's how why it's interesting. So you take a little thing and the thing changed. That's like magic.
Mm-hmm. No, that is. As we visit with Dr. Zhenrong Zhang here on Baylor Connections, mentioned the word nanoscale. We're going to talk about that when we talk about the microscope that you are producing. What is the nanoscale for those of us who probably know you're seeing something very small but don't know a lot about what that really means?
So nanoscale, if you look at your hair, one strand of hair, the diameter is about 100 micrometer. So if you divided 1 micrometer by 1,000 times, so then that will give you the nanometer. So that means that we are looking at very, very small things. And how small they are in the molecular level. So if you think about an atom, that's less than 1 nanometer. Normally, it's about 3-4 astrons, which is 0.1 nanometer. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about a molecule and then, for example, virus, that's about 10 to 100 nanometer. And DNA, and that's about 2 nanometer. So that gives you a pretty good idea that how small the nanometer is.
As we talk about your research, being able to delve into something that small and see it at the nanometer level, what types of things can that tell us now that we have tools to understand this that maybe we couldn't before?
So I use catalysis as an example. So when you try to convert, let's say you try to convert water into hydrogen and as an alternative energy resource, and you try to split the water, and you developed the catalyst, and it did the reaction, but then it doesn't really have the efficiency that you're looking for, and you don't know why. So normally, when you do the research, you just change all different parameters, and you try to tweak things, and then you run the experiment and see how it goes. But then you do not really know what's exactly happening on the catalytic material surface. So you're having lots of gas, and you measure the whole thing. But if you go to the nanoscale, and you just imagine that you have your zoom lens in, you dive into the interface, and you see how the water molecule interact with your surface, and why it reacted or why it didn't react, where it wants to react, where it likes to bound. And then you have a new, completely new perspective. Then you can tweak the material, you can change the material when you synthesize the material, and then you just completely change your thoughts. And so that's, I'm thinking as when you know there is a problem, but if you don't know exactly where is the problem, what is the problem, then you cannot solve the problem. So this gives you a way to really be able to see where the problem is at the molecular level.
Wow, that saves a lot of time and energy that you can focus on expanding once you know what the problem is, or enhancing what it is you're trying to do.
That's right. And also there's another perspective as a human being. I think we are always curious about the smaller size, what's really happening. And if we can really break it down, it just and from the curiosity point of view, we really want to know why, want to know what's going on in our wonderful world.
Visiting with Dr. Zhenrong Zhang. And Dr. Zhang, I'm curious to hear how you would describe what you do, in the sense that I know that your work can cover a lot of different areas. You have impacts on healthcare, on energy, on the environment. batteries, acid rain, the implications for what you do are very, very vast. So I'm curious, if someone from another department, let's just say someone from a discipline completely outside of physics, just met you in line at the faculty center and said, oh, what is it that you do? Or what's your research area? How would you describe that in the time it took to talk to them and then get your food in line there?
So I would say that I study how the molecules interact with the material and try to improve the property of the material. And that's one version, it depends. And sometimes I like the microscope that we're working on. And then sometimes I say that I develop a type of a microscope, can see the individual molecules and can tell the composition of the molecules. So it depends on who's asking, whether they have the science background or not.
You get some different strands of your research that are all related, but different aspects of it for sure. Well, let's talk about the microscope. Dr. Zhang, you're developing a microscope that, as you said, allows you to see things at the nanoscale. Just give us a background on that. Start it off with how did that come about? How did you go down this path towards developing something like this?
So my background is in the surface science, surface chemical physics, and I have been studying the photoreactions or surface reactions on catalytic materials for a long time at the atomic level. But the problem is we can see the molecules, but we cannot tell the chemical composition of the molecules. And that has been a struggle. And people are developing techniques and has been wonderful. There's a great advance in that area. And it turns out that the technique is really complicated to use. So we try to make this technique that is more accessible to not just us, but to lots of scientists and researchers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're really creating a tool that can impact not just your own discipline, but many disciplines. And we want to dive into that and how it can be used in a number of different ways. But as you described, if you can see something at the nanoscale, you can recognize potential problems or opportunities at a level sooner than you would have otherwise. How were you able to delve into that? I don't know if there's proprietary secrets, because I know there's things that are being developed here, but to the extent that you can, what are some of the aspects of this that have allowed you to delve further in and to highlight further in than other people have been able to?
So, fortunately, we already have the patent.
That's good.
So what we did differently is we combined the optical lens, essentially using the advanced material. It's a thin film. So we essentially replaced the optical lens by using thin film, and then we put on the optical fiber. So then everything comes with the fiber. So fiber does everything. The light comes in, shine light on the molecule, and then the photon and the molecule interact, and then the photon energy change. We collect the photon back through the optical fiber. So the imaging at the nanoscale, both in the morphology and also chemical composition point of view, they are all combined through this optical fiber.
When you talk about an optical fiber, how can we picture that or what that is or what its role is doing in that a little more?
So if you imagine optical fiber, you know that it can guide the light through from your house to somewhere. And so you can have optical signals and you can have the propagating electromagnetic wave. And what we do here is we change the shape of the optical fiber, and then we have this advanced material. We call it the plasmonic material and has coating. So if you want to see the nanometer scale, you have to focus your light to the nanometer scale. It's not an easy task because light is tricky. Once you focus, it's very small. They tend to leak it out. So the magic here is we use a material, the plasmonic material. We can allow the light propagate, so it's traveling along the surface of the plasmonic material, and it won't leak out. It just keep on going, and then it becomes a tiny, small, nanoscale spot, light spot. And so that's the beacon of the light. That is the tool that to probe how the molecule interact with the light, the photon, and then change the energy, and then you can tell why the molecule is that molecule, because it vibrates. It vibrates differently if you have a different molecule.
Mm-hmm. So vibration being one part of this, what are some things you're looking for to understand the composition of what you're seeing and uncover those clues that can help solve problems?
So I use two examples. So one example, that's the catalysis. So if you have a molecule bound to the surface, the vibration would change. Just like if you being held by someone else, when you vibrate, and then the vibration would be different. So then this will tell us that how the molecule bound with the surface and why it bound that way. And then if you want to change the bonding, and you can change the material. So then essentially for all the chemical reactions, that's the forming the bonding and break the bonding and to change to the chemicals that or the molecules that you would like. So for example, if you want to remove the CO, we all know it's toxic, and you want CO to interact with oxygen, it won't work by itself. You need a catalyst to combine these two molecules and become CO2. And so you need to bond the CO2 to the surface, and you want it to bond in a certain way so CO2 can find its partner, O2, oxygen. And so that's how you can tell the chemical composition. And so that's one example from the catalyst point of view. The other example, that's what I'm very interested in, is in the biomedical field. I'm not expert in that area at all, but we have colleagues at Baylor, and we talked with our colleagues at Baylor, Eric Bruce, Dr. Eric Bruce, and she's very interested in the technique. So essentially, she develops these nano drugs, so then deliver to the cell, cancer cell, let's say. And she wants to know how the molecule interact with the cell, and how the nano drug did the magic, how it interact. And it would be helpful to know exactly how it interact. And these nano drugs, you can imagine these are the molecules. And when they interact, they will change their vibration, and then they will become different.
Visiting with Dr. Zhenrong Zhang, Associate Professor of Physics at Baylor. So the medical field being one example. I know that's a big area, as you just said, you're working in right now. You also have aspects of this that can impact the environment, energy. Could you give us a couple examples in those areas as well? Because I think when you're talking about things like health, the environment, and energy, you're talking about some of the most important areas to all of us.
So catalysis has lots of applications in the different areas, just like what you said, in the energy and environmental. And one type of a material that we work with, that's the two-dimensional molybdenum disulfide. And it is, so normally if you want to do the, let's see, the hydrogen. If you want to create the hydrogen, there are different ways that you can create. And the clean one would be that you split water. And that's an electrochemistry process. And people normally use platinum. As you can imagine, platinum is really expensive. So people want to use a different material to be able to do that. So molybdenum disulfide is one of the catalysts and can be used for hydrogen evolution reactions. So you can create the hydrogen it's really fun. You put the molecule, you put the catalyst there, and then you put in the chemical cell, and you can see the bubbling of the hydrogen coming out. And you want to improve the catalytic property, and you want it to be comparable to platinum, so you don't have to use the expensive platinum there. So that's one example of how it contributes to the energy applications. And another example would be to remove the pollutant. So one of the material that we work with is the titanium dioxide. And titanium dioxide is a non-toxic material, and you actually have it in the paint in your house. And also you have those in your sunscreen. So it's non-toxic at all. And it can remove the air pollutant. For example, we all know that the construction materials that they have, they emit the formaldehyde, acetone, and they give problem to your lung. You can have a breath problem. And if you put this titanium dioxide as a catalyst, and then you can convert formaldehyde to CO2 and water. And so essentially you remove this toxic pollutants.
Wow. So that helps people, that helps plants, that helps the ecosystem around. That's everything.
Yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Visiting with Dr. Zhenrong Zhang, and you know, as we're sitting here talking, as you're describing this, maybe people can hear it in your voice, but you're smiling as you describe some of these things you can do, as you're describing being in the lab. What is it that most excites you and invigorates you when you go into work and get to work with students and work on these types of projects that that most speaks to you, you know, at this point in your career?
So you, as I said, you're always curious, and also you always want to do something that that's live up to your full potential. And I feel like I'm really blessed that I gave the opportunity, and then I can work with the wonderful students and bright minds, and we work together on something that hopefully someday it can make impact to the world. So that's the reason it motivates me every day, and to work on things that we all want to work on.
Visiting with Dr. Zhenrong Zhang. And Dr. Zhang, I'm curious, let's go back a little bit and learn a little bit more about, you mentioned you joined the Baylor faculty in 2010. What drew you to Baylor initially?
I was drawn by the Christian mission of Baylor University. At that time, I was a young Christian. I was baptized in maybe 2 or 3 years. And I really want to be in an environment that nurtures my Christian faith. And I can practice my Christian faith, and I can work with the students and live a life that we are supposed to live as a Christian. And I always feel like there is so much that I need to do, and I didn't get to do, or I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So it is the Christian aspect of Baylor University.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you as Baylor's working to become an R1 research university and is on track to do so by 2024? That idea of being a Christian research university, a Christian university that's producing top-tier scientific research and social science research and all of these things?
So for me, I think as a scientist that God blessed me with the I would say the ability to be able to explore the wonderful world, and gave me the ability to be able to work with the students. And I would like to live to my full potential to be able to do so. That I feel like that's why God led me here and want me to work on the research that I do. And there are, when I first became or know the Christian, I had the impression that science and the faith cannot be together. And they were brought together before I was a Christian. So that's, now I think they are all together. And I just think that's what we are calling to do, to be able to explore this wonderful world and be able to use the resources that God blessed us with and to improve our life and to help the other people if we can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Serving our neighbors through the research that you do. Absolutely. Well, that's exciting. Well, you're certainly doing a lot of great things with that. We can see your passion for this as we visit. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share. Thanks for delving into a topic that for a lot of us can be pretty remote and helping us kind of see it through your eyes and like the microscope, helping us see it a little bit better. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Zhenrong Zhang, Associate Professor of Physics at Baylor, our guest today here on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs online at baylor.edu/connections, and you can subscribe to the program on iTunes. Thanks for joining us here on Baylor Connections.